All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Tuesday, April 3rd. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
Doug Norrie's friend,
James Davis from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com. DFSR.com/MLB will get you that free 3-day trial to our projection system, which has been absolutely killing it to start the season. I think it's been, in terms of cash games, has cashed just about every single slate since the start of the year, with some offbeat plays, some I would say some chalkier plays, been really, really nice returns from the beginning of the season. So you can go and sign up for that now. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, DFSR.com/MLB. Also includes access to our members-only chat room. So if you want to sign up for the free 3-day trial and then just go ask some of our members how baseball's been to start the season, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. I know that there are biggest fans, biggest cheerleaders, and they will give you an honest opinion about the system, and we think that you'll be in it for the long haul. DFSR.com/MLB. Tuesday in baseball, we have two slates. You know, continue the early in the season, we get a lot more day games than we get typically once the year kind of kicks in. I think it's mostly because of weather stuff early to start the season, trying to avoid some of those colder places. Although that's not doesn't really totally line up with some of the schedule today. The schedule today starts at 4 o'clock East. Well, there's a 1 o'clock game, but we're going to skip that one. That's the KC and Detroit game.
It's only on the all day slate in FanDuel.
Right, exactly. So I think we can kind of skip by that one and focus in on the 4 o'clock slate after one of the worst days of pitching you'll ever see, as teams struggled to find their like fourth starter yesterday, and we just saw some really, really bad arms take the mound, although some ended up with some nice returns. We do get back to some ace-level starting pitching today, and thankfully it's spread out a little bit between the two slates, and we'll get into that. We'll go slate by slate, kind of talk about the 4 o'clock, 6 o'clock one, and then break down the 7 o'clock, talk about some pitchers, and then talk about some different team stacks that are standing out to us. You know, in the 4 o'clock, there's really not much discussion to start, at least for cash games, about Chris Sale. He's 11-4 on FanDuel. I've felt since the beginning of the season, FanDuel pricing, sort of how it was last year, incredibly soft to start the year. Is there any reason? I mean, 11-4, it's really the same for me on DraftKings as well, too. So it's not like DraftKings is out of the woods here, except that he's at least 12-9 on DraftKings, which makes you at least pause for a second.
Yeah, you got to think about it.
Right, you need to pause for a second and say, okay, that is, I don't know, more than a quarter of my overall salary cap that I'm spending on this one pitcher. And yet it still seems sort of worth it. The Sale, to you, just stands so far above the rest of the group. And then, mostly what we're talking about now is just like what percentage ownership he's going to be and whether or not in GBPs it's even worth the fade.
Yeah, I think it's not probably worth the fade. I mean, certainly not for cash game purposes. When you get a pitcher like this, like Sale, just for S's and G's, Doug, S's and giggles, as they say, I decided to run all-day lineups, and Sale still shows up in 100% of those as well. You just get quite a great money line for him. You know, this early in the season especially, we're still just basically going off what a guy was last year. You know, if the age is relatively normal, like he's not 39 years old or anything like that. And going up against the Marlins team that basically got rid of all their good right-handed hitting, it's just an excellent spot. So yeah, Sale from top to bottom. For me, I just don't see the point of fading him, really. I mean, when it comes to pitching, anything can happen. Like, anyone can have a bad game at any given time. But when you're just picking between four games, you got to kind of look and say, okay, like realistically, is it even possible for any of these other guys to have a good game? And outside of like maybe like Lester and Archer, I don't even see it. So yeah, I think it's Sale for me in all formats, just because it's early in the season too. I'm just not trying to get too cute. So yeah, I like Sale a lot.
We like to say that baseball is a high variance game, and it is in general. But the thing is, you need to take the variance with by position, and you need to separate it between hitters and pitchers, right? Because pitchers actually are pretty consistent for over the course of a season. Their standard deviation lines up in like that 0.4 range, which for the amount of points they score is somewhere like in the lines of a moderate NBA player in terms of overall consistency. And then you get the hitters are obviously the ones that are all over the map, simply because you get lumped effects around home runs and RBIs and whatnot.
But steals, pitchers, I mean, it goes on and on. There's
exactly. And the scoring is just so like, the very definition of all or nothing. So when you look at pitchers like this, Sale was one of the most consistent, if not the most consistent pitcher in the league. Started off fine to start the season in his opening game. Struck out when he went six innings, struck out nine. So I think that he might be 90% owned in cash games. I think just because it's hard to make a case for really some of these other arms that are going. Honestly, and like I said, it's hard. You can always make a case for tournaments because you want to get separation. And if you think he's going to be 50% or higher owned, then you can decide if you want to be underweight or overweight, you know, with the rest of the field. And there are a couple other guys to mention here. My bigger question is, if we're going to play him at 12-9 on DraftKings, right now our system has you pairing him with Archer, who's an underdog against the Yankees. So the Yankees clearly have made, they made the most significant upgrade of the offseason by getting Giancarlo Stanton. Also had guys like Neil Walker in the middle of the lineup. They're at the top of that lineup is a murderer's row. Now, it's mostly right-handed, so that's good. So you get Stanton, Judge, and Sanchez in the middle of the lineup that are all righties. But at 8,100, do his peripherals at this point just trump the fact that he's an underdog and facing arguably the best offense in baseball? We could argue about that. But, like, you know, where do we stand? Is it fine to play him at this? Like, at some point, is there a price for everybody and you can just play a guy like Archer in cash?
Yeah, it's not pretty, for sure. You know, bringing him against New York outside of his comfortable home park is not a spot where, like, on paper you're going to really want to land. But again, you just have to ask yourself, if not Archer, then who? Because you're not just picking Archer in a vacuum, just like for funsies, because he's in your utility slot or something like that. You actually have to start two pitchers. And as you go down the list, like, you're probably not going to want to play Ty Block, I would guess. You're probably not going to want to play Marco Gonzalez or Jose Urena or Cody Reed, right? So if these guys are all off the table, you're basically deciding between Jordan Montgomery, 8,300, basically the same price, much worse pitcher, although with a better matchup, or John Lester at 10-7 against Cincinnati. So not a fantastic matchup or park. I don't like any of those plays, and so it's more of a process of elimination thing for me. I don't think you can go double expensive here with Lester and Sale, and so I'm willing to go down a little bit for Archer and understand, like, yeah, this is just sometimes the frogs you got to kiss on small slates early season baseball.
Lester was awful in opening day, only lasted three.
I hate Lester
innings
this year. Yeah.
Like, he walked three batters. By the way, you don't want to take too much from one game, and that's a trap a lot of people can fall into, is to say, oh, the first three games, and like, oh, this guy doesn't have a hit in the first three games, so let's, you know, X this guy out of all of our lineups. I don't want to do that. Now, that being said, you can get pitching performances that cause a little bit of a concern, yes, for you, or you might not. You might say, I am going to be okay taking a wait-and-see approach. Lester had the very best matchup opening day against the Marlins, who, I mean, they are awful at this point, and lasted three and a third, walked three guys, only struck out two, was yanked early, just looked really, really bad. And so this is a worse matchup. It's in a much worse park going into Cincinnati, and you're paying on DraftKings, what, like more than 2,000? Yeah, you're paying 2,600 more, basically for the run line, and that's really all it is, because you're getting better K upside for Archer anyway. I think
Lester
totally
wasn't even that good
it.
Last year. I mean, Lester had a 3.85 xFIP last year. The K's were up slightly, but the walks were way up. And I wrote about this in the ebook, but yeah, this is just another good early season lesson for folks. Individual performances tend not to matter very much, except when they're pitchers primarily, and except when they're extreme outliers in the areas of control and like power allowed. And I think you are seeing some of those early season red flags with Lester. I'm not interested at all in playing this guy, basically for the foreseeable future, unless we get some indication, even just like one really good bounce back game. And I guess I would be like, okay, he's like kind of a mid-range guy who you can consider, but 10-7's a joke, terrible price.
And Archer is coming off his best season of his career, struck out more than 11 per nine, XFIP down, XFIP three quarters of a run lower than his ERA. And I get that he's playing. And here's the thing. This is the last thing we'll say about this, and then we'll talk about the stacks. But the DraftKings specifically, the lesser degree FanDuel, because their pricing is softer, DraftKings will specifically price you on matchup and park. And they are looking at this as saying that whenever you play the Yankees, you're going to be cheaper than your mean salary for the rest of the season. And you're almost short of pitching in cores. I don't think you're going to see Archer for this as low at this price for the rest of the season, unless he's just playing the Yankees again. And if he's good this game, maybe that algorithm starts going the other way.
And by the way, one quick point about this too, as a scoring note, and I know we've spent a lot of time on probably fairly obvious play, but like, if Archer, say he faces the middle of that lineup and strikes out Stanton and gives up a homer to Judge or something, he's breaking even, right, for fantasy scoring purposes. So, like, those guys strike out a ton, both of those guys. So there's still upside in facing the Yankees, even though they're obviously a murderer's row. I'm not convinced that it's just not just a solid play.
keep your eye on the weather there. There are some there is some rain in the forecast, so that's the other thing that kind of affects pitching performances. And we mentioned some of these other guys. I think Jordan Montgomery, who has a tournament upside play, is there just because I'm not in love with the Tampa Bay lineup just in general, and the run line and money line are favoring him as good as you'll see in his price point. So like if you're figuring that the implied runs are just a tick higher for Tampa Bay than they are for, let's say, the Reds, then you're getting a significant discount on a guy whose peripherals aren't that different than John Lester. So if you're getting him for 20, it's funny because he's more than Archer, but if you're getting him for 2,000 less, then I think the Montgomery, there's a case to be made for Montgomery. In terms of stacking, you know, in terms of just in run lines, Boston comes in with a nice run line here. When you run lineups on our site, you're getting kind of a smattering. You're getting some Giants guys in there, which for the first time this season, we really haven't seen too many Giants in there. They're getting a nice matchup against Marco Gonzalez. Ty Block was fine-ish to start the season, although I still think that we can easily target the Mariners against him. In terms of cash games, where do you see yourself landing? Do you see it being, like, you know, there's some days in the early in the season we've seen, oh, look, we're just stacking Astros, and that's just what we're doing here, right? We're just stacking the Orioles a couple times, and that's just kind of what we're doing. Do you see that this slate as one of those, or do you see as a kind of mixing and matching just based on positions?
Yeah, I think our system is keying in on a couple different teams here a little bit. I think San Francisco is a team that's jumping immediately to the top here, and that's just on the bank of Marco Gonzalez, you know, the guy. He's just not quite a major league quality pitcher, probably. Vegas seems to suggest that that's the case. He's also a left-handed pitcher, which makes it a really comfortable spot for guys like Posey, yep. McCutcheon, you know, even Austin Jackson if he gets in there. So I think you're seeing our system say, hey, what more do you want? You know, you got a bad lefty on a four-game slate, on a slate where at least two of the pitchers are quite good. So, you know, beggars can't be choosers, and I think that's the place most people are going to start today.
Yeah, we have Jackson hitting leadoff. I think he will hit leadoff in this game. And like you said, they made upgrades to the middle of their lineup, specifically in this split. Longoria is better for his career against lefties. Posey is much better for his career against lefties. McCutcheon as well. And so this is not these are the specific moves they made in the offseason, and they're just a different team down the middle of that order than they were last year. And then you get all the way down to the guys like Pence down at the bottom of the lineup. But I think you can stack. Honestly, you can stack four of these. Now, the downgrade you're getting is the park is real bad for overall power. San Francisco is arguably the worst, maybe second worst in the entire league in terms of park factors for really any power, and then righty power specifically. So that's where you are getting a little bit concerned. But even with that, I think I'm totally fine with it. Because if you look at their run line, if you're looking at their team, and then you look, so right now we have them for 4.5 implied runs. And then you get the Red Sox, who are somewhere in the 4.7 range, except that they're priced way more. Like, Betts is 5,000 on FanDuel, exactly. Right? Or excuse me, 5,000 on DraftKings. You get Benintendi is 4.3K. Is it worth taking the extra money up? Like, do you think you're getting enough payoff to go to the Red Sox based on their price, even though you know that they're maybe implied for a few more runs?
I think you're going to have to pick and choose. You know, like, when you're going this expensive on a small slate for baseball, there tends not to be a lot of that really good, like, this guy's randomly batting second sort of value that will help you pay off the big price tag on a guy's like Betts, for instance. But I think you can probably pick one or two, you know, pick the one or two that you think are the best plays. Betts does come to mind there, and probably plug them in. And that's mostly because I think you are getting enough value specifically from San Francisco to make it work. Another team that our system is kind of looking at a little bit, flirting with, are just like some one-offs from Tampa Bay, depending on the lineup. Like, Wilson Ramos might wind up being a value, but I think basically if you target the cheaper guys in San Francisco, you can get one or two payoffs from Boston, but there's no way you're going to be able to pull a four stack from them and play Sale.
My final question is just as a strategy question here. If you look at our FanDuel lineups, FanDuel is clearly making adjustments for starting pitching going the other way. And we right now have Stanton and Judge in the top overall lineup. Judge is only 3,800, which seems like a crazy low price for him, even with the matchup, considering the season he's coming off of. Even Stanton at 4,400 has come out of the gates really damn hot for the Yankees. And I know we just mentioned Archer, but is there a point at which you can consider playing these guys at their prices, or do you think this is the system maybe just kind of going too much out on a limb based on the price and maybe not fully factoring in the matchup?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly so it's going to be based on a lot of factors, right? So there's run lines that it's going to consider. It's also considering park here. New York is a really, really good park. And it's also, and again, I nodded to this in the Archer discussion, but it's also thinking about full season performance and kind of averaging that out, or trying to smooth that out into one single game. And so that's a very, very difficult thing to do. And with guys like Stanton and Judge, we know that so much of their value is derived from hitting the ball out of the park only occasionally, because that's as much as anyone hits the ball out of the park, right? One every four games, or, you know, one every 3.7 games if you're truly one of the most insane players of all time. So that's, I think, what it's seeing more than anything else. It's like, you know, one out of four times that they're going to hit a home run in this game, and in those games you're going to get outsized value. So all this to say, I think if you play those guys, those don't look like cash game style plays to me. It's not a super good matchup. Archer does have K type stuff. Strategically, I would rather just shift those guys out of my lineup and take guys, you know, maybe like Mookie Betts, who has a slightly better situation, even if the price tag is a little bit higher. So that's kind of what my gut tells me here. Like, yeah, in terms of like a strict EV sense, they might be the right plays. But if you're just looking to try the cash today, I think their standard deviation is going to be through the roof.
All right, before we get to the main slate of baseball action, hit us up with a quick sponsor.
Well, you know what I'm going to go with here, Doug. NoHalftime.com. NoHalftime, a great app for people who like to play daily fantasy sports, but maybe don't want to put in the time commitment of creating those full stack salary cap game format lineups. So basically what they offer is the opportunity to do one-on-one daily fantasy sports challenges where you just pick one player and you pick a player you think your guy's going to beat, and you just issue your challenge to the world. I know you first got into NoHalftime through MLB. Tons of price inefficiencies, you know, picking bad pitchers versus good hitters and up and down the lineup. No Halftime is a great spot to go to get some supreme value during this MLB season. Also, if you use promo code DFSR, you can get a 50% bonus up to $50 on your first deposit. So check them out, NoHalftime.com, and tell them we sent you.
So I think some interesting possible debate here for the evening slate of games, right? So we're back to having good pitching back, you know, as I said, mentioned earlier that yesterday was a real big problem with pitching. And we're getting a couple ace-level guys back here, a couple mid-tier guys. One thing that I'm wondering about, looking at our system right now, so this is going to be a multi-part question. So we have the two big arms that are going, I think we can agree, are Verlander and Kershaw. And I put Kershaw on a level obviously higher than Verlander, their first games aside. So, but the two questions I have here. One, there's been much was made before the beginning of the year about the Humidor being placed in Chase Field and how that was going to suppress power. I get that four games is not a good sample size, right? So we could see at the end of the season that ends up being true. Then that being said, people were just kind of guessing at it, right? Like no one really knew what was going to happen. The Arizona, Kershaw is facing Arizona. The first four games in Arizona had 10 runs, 17 runs, 3 runs in the third game, and then 15 runs, okay? Now the pitching for these teams is not going to be lights out, so there's that to factor.
Right, no Kershaws in that group. Go ahead.
Exactly. Now, right now we have Verlander actually projected for a slightly higher than Kershaw, which is nuts. Like that never happens in our system ever. Like Kershaw is always the highest projected guy. So I think there's one I need to go back and probably just make sure the inputs are correct. They were correct for him the first game of the season. But two, is there something to be made of the Arizona thing where it was already one of the best hitters parks in baseball that we kind of were usually trying to avoid it anyway, and maybe this Humidor thing is not true. Two, are we wanting to ever fade Kershaw at reasonable prices on either site in cash games? And then where do we stand on Verlander? So it's a lot. It's layered here. I'm a little confused. I was a little confused when I looked at this because it's never close for Kershaw and cash unless he's pitching in Coors. Would you agree with that for our system? Like it's just Kershaw or bust every time. And now it's kind of not. And I'm just trying to figure out why maybe.
Yeah, so I think there's probably a lot going on here. I mean, obviously, some of it is just strictly a value. Like when we're talking about why he's in the lineups, some of it's a value thing. Verlander, 1,200 less. It's a smaller slate. Yeah, it's a medium-sized slate, but smaller for baseball because, you know, oftentimes we'll get, like you said, later in the season, all the games starting at 7 and going pretty deep into it. In this particular instance, when I think about the Humidor, in hindsight, it seems like it was almost destined to be something that people were going to wildly speculate about that they didn't really have any clue about, right? Because like I would imagine a humidor, I don't have a humidor in my home, so I don't know exactly how these work, but I imagine it's something like a thermostat, right? Where like there are settings on it. So like if I install it, just because someone says, well, we installed a thermostat in our house, they're like, well, I guess it's going to be 80 degrees in there. It's like, well, I could just not turn it up that high or something, right? Like, and so I think, yeah, Arizona may have installed a humidor. They may still be experimenting with the settings. We have no idea what's going on with their whole humidor situation there. We know early returns have been that it's made no difference at all in terms of batting output. Well, I don't think we can say that confidently going forward necessarily for the reasons that you described. You know, four-game sample size really is basically nothing. I think it's worth it's still worth considering the old school statistics with Arizona and probably weighting those significantly more heavily than like a few people on Fangraphs saying they think the humidor is going to make a big difference, right? Like that's that seems to me to be a much more significant thing to consider than anything else. So I think for that reason, I'm going to tend to just rely upon old park data until I see some significant change. And as we've known from the past, Arizona's been a really, really tough place to pitch. So I think for that reason, it makes fine sense that Kershaw isn't showing up super high here.
I'll say 3.3 implied runs, which is what Arizona has, is as high as you'll ever see a team have against Kershaw, really. Like Kershaw usually exists somewhere in that like 2.9 or lower, or at least historically, right? Like historically, if you look at the numbers, that there are almost always sub three. So when you're getting him at sort of peak pricing with maybe not the best implied run line, you are in a little bit of trouble. And then, you know, he and Verlander have around the same projection on DraftKings. Where Verlander's higher is on FanDuel because the win matters so much. How much, you know, do you think this is correct? Because we look at Houston, and Houston's a minus 240 favorite going in. My guess is that probably drops over the course of the day a little bit, but still, it's not going to drop off a cliff. So the win expectation for Verlander right now, where Kershaw is minus 170, is just much higher. And so he's just on a better team. Carlos Correa being playing or not is not going to swing that line too much, sure. I don't think. So I'm not, you know, he left the game early. You know, how much does the win? Because the win's an all or nothing thing too. So like, if you don't get the win,
terrible opposing pitcher and Mike Wright Jr. too, right? Like, there's definitely
Baltimore's really struggling to start the season here. Yep. Like, they're hitting Chris Davis leadoff. I'm not sure how long that's. I don't mind it from like a DFS perspective. I'm fine to play him. I know he hasn't been good. I'm fine to play him at minimum prices if he's going to hit leadoff.
And it's very strange.
Well, you know, I will say for Baltimore, it didn't make any sense to me. And then I looked and like none of their guys are good at getting on base. So like it kind of like, what does it matter? Like he and Adam Jones get on base the same amount, which is to say poorly. And then Machado, you know, he had his struggles last year. Shoup's got a nice power bat, but it was like, it was funny. I was like, oh, there's gotta be, I like the idea and there's just gotta be a better option. And I kind of looked down all the guys and there just wasn't. So whatever, I don't know. But either way, they're a team that K's a lot. Do we think, and again, knowing that the win is an all or nothing thing, it's very binary. You either get it or you don't. Quality right. start, you either get it or you don't. Are those like, are getting, having those numbers just tick up a little bit in the system as compared to maybe Kershaw, is that enough to just, and knowing the savings, would we feel comfortable fading Kershaw? I almost never do that, right? And this might be the first scenario where we kind of really actively consider it.
Yeah, I think I'd still rather not. I think just from a chalk perspective, like, Kershaw will almost certainly be significantly higher owned. I also like that Kershaw's pitching against a National League team, so he at least gets to go up against the pitcher one out of every nine plate appearances or whatever. But that being said, like, I mean, the case is a strong one. I just think, I wonder this early in the season, we talk about pitcher being the lowest standard deviation place. Like, is that the hill we want to die on? Like, Verlander last season, yeah, he wound up with a pretty good ERA. It looked pretty similar to his prior season, but everything went in the wrong direction, back in the wrong direction for him, right? The Ks were down, the walks were up, the fly balls were up. Like, everything led to him having that 4.17 xFIP, which was basically the same as the 4.19 xFIP that he had in the 2014 season where everyone was, you know, spitting on his grave, you know? So I'm not the biggest Verlander fan here. I also think with Vegas, there might be some recency bias here. And just the fact that the Orioles have had the lowest overall WOBA against right-handed pitchers this season, I don't see that continuing for the whole entire season. And so I think there's so many little factors pointing towards some of this being like sample size issue problems that I think I would just ultimately rather just have Kershaw, regardless of what our current early season numbers say.
Final note on these guys, we do talk a lot about pitch counts early in the season. We had talked about this with Kershaw for the first day, how the Dodgers have been very careful with pitch counts. They took him to 91 pitches in the first game, in a game that he had only allowed one earned run through six innings, and he struck out seven, so it wasn't like he was in any trouble or anything. He did allow eight hits, so maybe the innings could have gone a little further, but 91 pitches, you have to suspect that goes up for him. And Verlander was sort of in the same situation. They only took him to 90 pitches, also six innings.
Right.
He had struck out five. So in terms of pitch counts, I don't see one of these guys having the complete edge. If anything, they just look like both these teams are crazy good at analytics. So, you have to imagine they're handled in very much the same way. Other starting pitchers that we can possibly throw out, almost impossible probably to roster both of these two on DraftKings together. Is there a pitcher or two that stand out to you as being in a good spot relative to their price points?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Garrett Richards last time, and he was downright terrible in his first start. He had the 4 strikeouts, 3 walks, allowed 4 earned runs against Oakland. I think I'm still willing to consider it here, though, against Cleveland. I mean, and primarily, you know, we see this on DraftKings, and if you're new to baseball, this is going to feel uncomfortable for you because you're probably just not going to be used to playing just like cheap guys at really important positions. That also, it's not like he's like cheap because he's filling in for Kershaw and is going to get the same amount of production. Like, it might work in basketball. Like, he's cheap because he's not very good, and that's going to be pretty disconcerting for a lot of people. But I ultimately do think the matchup, you know, playing in LA, in Anaheim, which is one of the more underratedly good pitchers parks, against a Cleveland offense that, you know, the early this season, they also haven't been very good. I don't know. I think there's enough here to where you can stomach Richards in that pitcher two slot, understanding that overall, like, the pitcher two is pretty darn thin over on DraftKings today.
My general rule with DraftKings is if I can get pitchers in this price range that strike out like 8.5 guys per 9 plus,
yeah, sure,
then I'm one, willing to live with the matchup, and, well, mostly that I'm just willing to live with the matchup because these guys will get really priced down based on that. Garrett Richards is really cheap because he was real bad in the first start, and Cleveland's just a bad matchup right now. But you get him, he was 8.5, he was almost not, strikeout per nine for the last 2 seasons, and is coming at 6,500. And like, and other guys that we've felt uncomfortable with to start the season that have paid off: Francisco Liriano, Jaime Garcia, Luis Castillo. These are all been DraftKings. Otani for the Angels the other day. These have all been strike guys we saw as having strikeout potential because those strikeouts will make up for the mistakes. Like Luis Castillo, he K'd enough, he got rocked by the Nationals and still K'd enough guys to just not be a total stain. Like, he was still scored like 8 or 9 DraftKings points, right? So like, if you have the strikeout ability, if you're cheap enough, the strikeouts will win according to our system because the win doesn't matter as much on over there, but the K's will. So I think that's kind of where it's coming in. I know it's like a long-winded response, but I do have a sort of a general rule with DraftKings, and I am willing to stomach a name that does not look as good if the overall peripherals are decent, and I know they're in a bad matchup. One guy that I'm kind of targeting here is possibly Jay Happ. He's got a nice run line at nice money line at -186. I was in the same situation of targeting a lefty pitcher against the White Sox with Danny Duffy on opening day. That did not work out. It was working out really good for the first 3 innings, and then the wheels, I mean, completely fell off.
Yeah, sounds like Danny Duffy to me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was wheels coming off, all 4 wheels come off, and you're stuck in the middle of the highway kind of territory. Like, he got just completely shelled in the 4th inning. But I'm still willing to go back to Happ here. Peripherals are fine. White Sox, still a young team that will strike out a lot. They do have some righty power in the middle of the lineup that scares you a little. And the park is not great. But again, he's 7,900, and I'm just going to need.
But other than that, I mean,
other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? It was like, exactly. Yeah, I think that I'm saying all this to say these are going to be the plays that feel somewhat uncomfortable, and there still are cases for them. And I think Happ has a better money line than Kershaw today, right? Like, I get that there's other factors, but in terms of just overall win expectation, Vegas sees him as having a better win expectation than Clayton Kershaw. So
for sure. One quick note on pricing too, and because this is something, it's another big like learning moment for you if you're coming over to baseball. Baseball's the one sport where the sites will overcorrect pricing based on early season performance and create value more so than any other sport. And the reasons for this are a couple. It's because in basketball, typically if you're poor at the beginning of the season, it's because you had less opportunity, right? Like, randomly your role changed, and now this season Kyle Lowry's playing 29 minutes instead of 37 or something, right? So the price comes down, and it probably should. In baseball, good players and even mediocre players, you can just run bad, right? So Richard's bad in his first start just means nothing. Like, in baseball, it actually means not a single thing. Those kind of like average sort of bad starts don't mean anything, but the sites look at that and they will correct the price. And heaven forbid he should have 2 more unlucky starts in a row or just 2 more bad starts. You're going to see those prices come down and down. And it's the one sport that rewards a steady hand more so than any other sport, because unless you have definitive news that a guy is injured, specifically injured, you cannot assume that these first 2 whole weeks of games, a full NFL season's worth of games, mean anything at all. So that's really the trick, and where you have to trust and you have to sit there and say, I can't just pass up value because of a little bit of run bad. Not to say that that necessarily applies to Richards, but it's an early season concept. And if you're a chatter of ours, please understand this before you run into the chat and say, what's the deal with this guy? Because we've been proven right on this every single time we've ever stuck with a guy, and we have a 100% track record here. So, you know, just be a little bit cautious here before you go off the deep end, walking away from value. So that's it.
And I, you said 2 weeks. I'd say a month. I say 2 months. I'm willing to extend.
You can go a whole season. Yeah. I mean, for sure. I'm saying at least start with your 2 weeks. Give yourself April before you start jumping off a cliff and saying, why this guy in the lineup again?
Let's talk about some of the stacks here that we have going in terms of just teams that are in good spots. Some of these have been concentrated for, in terms of our system onto just a couple specific teams to start the season. That makes sense. There are haves and have-nots in baseball, just like any other sport. And some lineups are just have been in better spots to start the season and are just better top to bottom. Is there a lineup or two that you're targeting for cash games that appear, I don't know, on the safer side, understanding that safe is a completely relative term when we talk about baseball hitters?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, one thing that, you know, I've talked about this at length, but a place to start for me when I'm talking about stacking for big tournaments is just looking for the worst or least qualified pitchers. I think that's usually a pretty straightforward process. Sometimes, you know, rookies come up and you don't know that they're actually good or have big strikeout stuff. But, you know, Vegas Lions can be a pretty good proxy here for where to start. And I think you've got some true bums going today. You got Jack Flaherty going for St. Louis against Milwaukee. Milwaukee has one of the highest implied run totals on the slate, in spite of not being a team that has a ton of conventionally big name bats, right? I mean, yeah, they've got some guys that you're going to recognize, but by and large, you're getting a lot of runs assigned to not a lot of DFS salary. And that's kind of the sweet spot for me in terms of trying to figure out where I'm going to find value. I think Houston, you know, I know they don't have Correa tonight, but that actually is almost encouraging because they also have one of the higher implied run totals on the night against a terrible pitcher in Mike Wright Jr., who's probably just not a major league quality level starter, and just another team where I think you can get some pretty decent value towards the middle of that lineup there.
One thing, and it was me that said it, Correa has not been ruled out for tonight. He left the game early today, so we need to know.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's right.
The good thing about baseball is that we just have this information so early, right? Like, at least for the lineup standpoint.
Yeah, you get the lineups like 3 hours in advance.
Exactly. Like, hours and hours and hours to kind of fiddle with things and to know. So my guess is Correa doesn't play simply because it's really rare for a guy to get removed from a game and then to come play the next day. But that being said, I'm sort of guessing on that. I see a couple teams as falling into that range of just being in good matchups against just less quality arms. One is, and this is never going to sound all that sharpish to recommend the Cubs, but the Cubs are facing Cody Reed. Now, Cody Reed was the opening day starting pitcher for the Reds, and he has strikeout stuff, but his big bugaboo is walks. In 65 innings, he's walked more than five batters per nine. That is at complete death when you play the Cubs. Like, they are the one team that if walks are in your profile, you are in huge trouble because they will just not chase anything from the top of the lineup to the bottom, basically. Guys like Rizzo and Bryant are among the most patient hitters in the game. Contreras is very patient. They'll play matchups with you. You're getting a big price increase on Albert Almora, but not a huge one. If he's going to continue, I'm guessing they're going to keep a steady hand with Almora and keep hitting him at the top of the lineup. His price has come up a little bit, but he's in a nice spot. So I do like the Cubs in this spot a lot. And the other team that we're honing in on a lot is the Blue Jays. Now, the Blue Jays don't have a lot of lefty bats to go against Miguel Gonzalez, but if guys like Kevin Travis are still going to hit leadoff, we saw Donaldson go yard last night. Smoke is a decent price in the middle of the lineup, though I believe he's better against lefties for his career. But they actually have added a couple lefty bats in the middle of the lineup. Well, Solarte is a switch hitter, but Solarte and Granderson. So they're not, you know, in the past, the Blue Jays of your older brother, not your dad, but your older brother, have been almost all righty bats up and down the lineup. They have gotten away from that a little bit in the middle. They've been able to sort of stagger it with some switch hitters. So I don't mind them in this spot. They have a 5.2 implied run line on the day, and their prices, especially in the middle of the lineup, aren't really lining up probably with the opportunity against Miguel Gonzalez, who has spent most of his career being pretty damn bad.
Gonzalez, I mean, he's just one of these guys. If you're not familiar with his work, he's had some historically incredible home runs allowed seasons. Like, you know, if you go down the top 10 in terms of home runs allowed from year to year, usually you'll find guys like among qualified pitchers in that like 1.4 to 1.7 range. And that's a lot of home runs. And Gonzalez is just like a few years ago, he was just consistently doing this. We're talking 2014 and 15. So 4 and 5 years ago, he was allowing, you know, 1.42, 1.49 home runs per nine for entire seasons. And now he's 5 years older, right? So against a team that can really mash, I love that stack for big tournaments.
Yeah, there are definitely some good stacks available here for the evening slate. You're going to want to go over to our site too. Check out our Mains Picks article where we're putting up cash game plays. But each day we're also highlighting some other GBP targets. Chris, our boy Chris Durrell, is on both of those today. He always puts out just phenomenal content. So go and check out the Stacks and Pitchers article. Those will deviate a little bit from the main picks and just give you a variety of plays. And then, as always, go over and use some of our tools on the site where you can stack and double stack teams. You can, you know, obviously lock and exclude players, and just a bunch of different ways that you can filter out to put together cash and tournament lineups. That's dfsr.com/MLB. We'll get you that free 3-day trial to the projection system, which has been, yeah, really excellent to start the season. It's always really encouraging when a season starts off well, when your base assumptions are at least sort of paying off in the short term. And that has definitely been the case for baseball so far. We will be back again later in the week talking more baseball. Buddy, enjoy today's afternoon and evening games.
See you later, alligator.